We read out of our scripture reading this morning that Jesus had washed the disciples' feet. That passage talks about the fact that Jesus' mission was drawing to a conclusion. It was the night that Jesus would be betrayed. Judas had already made a deal with the Jewish leaders to betray Jesus. And Jesus had gathered his disciples to eat one last Passover meal and to give them final instructions before his gruesome death. It was a solemn occasion that his disciples didn't understand. In fact, what we're told is that in Luke's account, I know we were going to be basically focusing on John, but take a look at Luke's account in Luke 22. Luke 22, and in verse 24, it says, "There also arose a dispute among them as to which of them would be the greatest." Now, I want you to think about that. Jesus wanted a final meal with his disciples. He wanted to spend time with his disciples one last time. And what do? They start bickering. They start quarreling about who's going to be the greatest. And this is not the first time this has come up. They've been doing this on and off basically the whole time that Jesus had been teaching in the around Jerusalem and Judea and Galatia, Galilee. He'd been all over these places and they've been bickering and talking about who's going to be greatest. And they do it again at the very end. No matter how many times Jesus has answered that. But going back to John, take a look at John chapter 13. John tells us in verse 1, John chapter 13, verse 1. It says, "Now before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that he would depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end." John starts out emphasizing how much Jesus loved his disciples. And now this was despite the fact that Judas had by this time decided to carry out his plan that he was going to betray Jesus. That's what it says in the very next verse. "During the supper, the devil, having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him." It was already started. But Jesus focused on his love for his disciples. In fact, just a short while earlier, in Luke chapter 22, in Luke 22 and verse 21, it says, "Behold, the hand of the one betraying me is with mine on the table. For indeed the Son of Man is going to, as it has been determined, but woe to that man whom he has betrayed." Jesus had basically exposed and said that one of the disciples was going to betray him. Judas knew that Jesus was talking about him, but he pretended like he didn't understand, like any of the other disciples. In fact, in John 13, in verse 2, the Greek literally says that Satan threw a dart at Judas. You might think of it as, you know, throwing it there and it stuck. It held there. Judas had been toying with the idea, but now temptation struck. Jesus had exposed his plans. He embarrassed him in front of the other disciples. Judas decided, "I'm going through with this." And so that little pebble that starts the avalanche that rolls down towards Jesus' final death started to roll. And Jesus knew this. He knew exactly what was happening. Take a look again at verse 3. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand, and he had come forth from the Father and was going back to the Father. He knew this was his final hour. He knew all the things that were leading up to it. And yet his disciples decided to quarrel. Now John doesn't mention the quarrel. Luke does. But then Luke doesn't mention what Jesus decided to do about it. You know, consider that you, what would you do knowing that you're about to die an agonizing death? How would you spend the last moments? Would you spend it the time with the friends or the friends that you knew was going to betray you? That's what Jesus chose to do. Many would be engrossed in their own depression, but Jesus instead focuses on his companions. That phrase at the end of John 13, verse 1, it says, he loved them to the end. It can also be translated as utterly, absolutely, completely, perfectly, to the fullest extent. Jesus loved his disciples. And Jesus decided to show them how much he loved them. Now we got to consider the fact that Jesus washed the feet of men. Men who were clueless about his feelings. They didn't really understand that Jesus was going to his death. Though Jesus told them, it didn't register. These were men who were constantly returning to an argument that, you know, truth be told, was useless. It was a silly argument that really didn't matter. And in regards to one, he washed the very feet of the one who would betray him to his death. That's what we're talking about by love. It doesn't matter who a person is or what they have done or how many times they have done it. We can show love to each other. Now, Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, several years before this event, in Matthew chapter 5 and in verse 44. Matthew chapter 5 and in verse 44 says, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Jesus demonstrated that. The very man who made himself his enemy by betraying him, Jesus showed love. Why did he do that? He was putting into practice the very things he was teaching. He was showing to us a lesson on what love really is. But it was also a lesson on humility. It was a custom for in this region for guests to be provided with water to wash their feet. Now, either the host would provide water so the person could wash their own feet. Like, for instance, if we go back to Genesis, just read a few passages out of Genesis chapter 18. And in verse 4, when three men walked by and Abraham invited them to come by. In verse 4, it says, please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. Abraham, as a host, provided water so that these men could wash their feet. In verse 19, or chapter 19, verse 2, when Lot had two angels visit him, and he said, and now behold, my lords, please turn into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise up early and go on your way. It was a custom for that time. In chapter 24 and verse 32. It says, so the man entered the house, and then Laban unloaded the camels. He gave straw and fed the camels and water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. And again in chapter 43. The reason why I wanted to point out these things is just so that you understand. This is not unusual. This was common practice. Chapter 43 and verse 24. Then the man brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water, and they washed their feet. And he gave their donkeys fodder. This was how you treated guests. Sometimes, if you were rich enough, you had your servants wash your guests' feet. For instance, 1 Samuel chapter 25 is mentioned there. Though a servant doesn't actually do it, it mentions in 1 Samuel 25 and in verse 41, she arose and bowed her face to the ground and said, "Behold, your maidservant is the maid to wash the feet of my Lord's servants." She's trying to emphasize how low she is. "I'm so low that I'm a servant who washes other servants' feet." So it wasn't a new practice that Jesus instituted. It's been going on for centuries, thousands of years. And it was a necessity. Here's a quote from William Barclay. "The roads of Palestine were unsurfaced and unclean. In dry weather, they were inches deep in dust. In wet, they were liquid mud. The shoes of ordinary people were sandals, which were simply soles held onto the feet by a few straps. They were little protection against the dust or mud of the roads. For that reason, there was always great water pots at the door of a house, and a servant was there with an ewer and a towel to wash the soiled feet of the guests as they came in." It was just what you did. Everybody's feet were filthy just from walking around. And so the tradition was you had water pots ready so the guests could wash their feet before they came into the house. It was just polite practice. It was an act of hospitality. It was an expected custom. Take a look at Luke chapter 7. Luke 7 and verse 44. "Turning towards the woman, he said to Simon, 'Do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water.'" That's the point that's being made here. It would have been normal. That's what a host does all the time. This host never even bothered to bring out water for Jesus, so he invited him over for dinner. He said, "You gave me no water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but she, since the time I came in, has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she anointed my feet with perfume." What a contrast from what was expected and normal, customary treatment of a guest and what this man did to Jesus. It was an act of service. For instance, in 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and in verse 9. It says, "A widow is to be put on the list only if she is not less than 60 years old, having been the wife of one man, having a reputation for good works, and she has brought up children, if she has shown hospitality to strangers, if she washed the saints' feet, if she has assisted those in distress, if she devoted herself to every good work." Now notice, it's an act of service just like giving strangers a place to sleep. Or raising children, it was something everyone did. The point is, Jesus wasn't instituting some new religious ritual. He was teaching lessons. And it was a lesson that Peter, at that time, just did not understand. Going back to John 13, look at verse 6. John 13, verse 6, "So he came to Simon Peter, and he said to him, 'Lord, do you wash my feet?' And Jesus answered and said to him, 'What you do not realize now, but you will understand hereafter.'" Peter knew what Jesus was doing. He asked, "Are you going to wash my feet?" He already seen him wash somebody else's feet. But what he didn't understand was why. You see, washing feet was something the lowest servants did. You either did it yourself or you got the most menial servant took care of that task. Think about maybe today, if you want to put it in that terms, caring for the sick, or cleaning somebody's house, or mowing someone's lawn, or driving someone to the doctor. These are little tasks that you say, well, everybody does it. And a lot of times, like mowing the lawn and stuff like that, we just, I'd really rather not. But Jesus' point is that no one is too good to do the lowest of service. In fact, take a look at John 13 and verse 12. John 13, verse 12, he says, so then when he had washed their feet and taken his garment and reclined at the table again, he said to them, do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for so I am. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should also do as I did to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is one who is sent greater than the one who sent him. Now, Jewish rabbis at this time, they were the cream of the crop. They were usually served. They were honored. They were catered to when they came over to your house. But Jesus said, I came to serve. In fact, go back to Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10 and verse 45. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life for a ransom for many. Now think about it. If I refuse to serve others, and that's one of Jesus' points, then I'm acting like I'm greater than the master. The master could go and do the most lowly service, and I refuse, then am I acting like I am of a higher status than Jesus? Barclay also said, love is always like that. For when, for example, someone falls ill, the person who loves him will perform the most menial services and delight to do them, because love is like that. Sometimes men feel that they are too distinguished to do humble things, too important to do the menial task. Jesus was not so. He knew that he was Lord of all, and yet he washed his disciples' feet. See, greatness in the kingdom is through humble service. Take a look at Matthew chapter 23. Matthew 23 and verse 11. But the greatest among you shall be your servant. Whoever exalts himself shall be humbled, and whoever humbles himself shall be exalted. Even the smallest service is not going to go unnoticed or unrewarded. Also in Matthew chapter 10 this time. Matthew chapter 10 and verse 42. And whoever in the name of a disciple gives one of these little ones even a cup of cold water to drink, truly I say to you, he shall not lose his reward. Jesus was teaching humility. That's why Peter had a hard time understanding that. Jesus, he knew, was the Son of God. He knew he was the rabbi. He knew he was the teacher. It just turned the whole social atmosphere upside down. You're going to wash my feet? but it was also a lesson on submission. Because Peter didn't want Jesus to serve him. Peter understood, I need to serve you. In John 13 again, and in verse 6, so he came to Simon Peter and he said to him, Lord, do you wash my feet? Jesus said to him, what I do, you do not realize now, but you will understand hereafter. Peter said, never shall you wash my feet. And Jesus answered him, if I do not wash you, you have no part in me. See, Peter had pride in the one he was following. Peter knew Jesus was God. He was the Messiah. He was the King. And for the King to wash his feet, it just was the wrong idea. Warren Wiersbe said, it takes humility and grace to serve others. But it also takes humility and grace to allow others to serve us. See, the beautiful thing about a submissive spirit is that it can be both give and receive the glory of God. Now, sometimes we're not told in advance why we must accept things as they are. But we need also to learn to accept what God does. Knowing that God does the right things in our lives. Whether Peter understood it or not didn't matter. You notice that Jesus didn't sit down and explain to them right then. He wanted Peter to submit at that time. Simply because he said so. And Peter did manage to do that at times. For instance, in Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5, and start with verse 4, it says, when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch. Simon answered and said, Master, we have worked hard all night and caught nothing, but I will do as you say and let down the nets. Peter said, it doesn't make sense, but I'll do it. But at this point, Peter wasn't always consistent. And he's looking at it saying, the washing of feet, that doesn't make sense. He said, don't do that. But Peter had to learn about submission, and we need to learn that as well. And there's one other point. There's another lesson that Jesus makes, and that's on application. I want you to take a look again at what Jesus said in John chapter 13, verse 17. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them. Now, he's not talking about just foot washing, because it's in the plural. He's not talking about one thing. He's saying, if you understand these concepts, then you're blessed when you do them. See, knowing's not enough. Knowledge has to be put into practice. We got to do Jesus' will. In Luke chapter 6, in verse 46, the good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth what is good. The evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth what is... Oops, I went to 46. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? Why do you acknowledge Jesus? Why is it just words? And you're not actually practicing it. Because if we don't do what Jesus says, it's not going to go well for us. In Luke chapter 12, and in verse 47, it says, and that slave who knew the master's will and did not get ready or act in accord with his master's will receive many lashes. We all know the parable about the Good Samaritan. But look at what Jesus says at the very end of it. In Luke chapter 10 and verse 36, it says, which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands? And he said, the one who showed mercy toward him. Then Jesus said to him, go and do the same. It's not enough to understand the concept. You've got to put it into practice. We have to be doers. In fact, James tells us in James chapter 1, James chapter 1 and verse 21. Therefore, putting aside all filthiness and all that remains of wickedness and humility, receive the word implanted, which is able to save your souls. But prove yourselves doers of the word, and not merely hearers, who delude themselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man who looks at his natural face in a mirror. For once he has looked at himself and has gone away, he immediately has forgotten what kind of person he was. But the one who looks intently at the perfect law, the law of liberty, and abides by it, and not having become a forgetful hearer but an effectual doer, this man will be blessed in what he does. And it can't be put off. In fact, that was the point that James makes later in James chapter 4. James chapter 4 and verse 13, it says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we'll go into such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. Therefore, to the one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. Why do we have to do it? If we don't, we start forgetting. If we don't do it, we'll miss the opportunities to do it. We have to put the teachings into practice. See, Jesus demonstrated his love, not just of the good, but he showed love even of the unrighteous, as he taught that we are to love our enemies. Not that Jesus wants anyone to remain in sin. He wants everyone, you too, to submit to his will. And even if you don't fully understand why right now, but if you know what you need to do to become a Christian, then you need to do so. Because we're not guaranteed a future. So putting off obedience is a dangerous bet. It's not enough to know what you need to do. We need to come and do the Lord's will. If there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there is no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those who are children of God, we'd like the prayers of your brother on your behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.